Welcome to Command Control Power, a weekly podcast hosted by three certified members of the Apple Consultants Network, drawing from nearly half a century of combined experience. We talk shop, interview vendors and colleagues, and share what we've learned while operating our technology consulting practices. This is Joe Saponari of CIMAC, and my two co-hosts are Jerry Zygmunt of MacWorks and Sam Valencia of the HCS Technology Group. We also offer a weekly email newsletter, which includes show notes for each episode. Learn more at commandcontrolpower.com. And thanks for listening. This episode of Command Control Power is brought to you commercial-free and is made possible by our Patreon sponsors. You can help bring more commercial-free episodes by going to patreon.com/cmdctrlpwr and supporting the show with a monthly pledge. Thank you for your support of Command Control Power.
So, Jerry, I know you've been a big fan of the Apple Watch Nike edition. Which version was that? Was that like a year ago or 2 years ago? Like a gen?
Yeah, I got a Series 2. I originally had the first gen, and then I got a Best Buy on sale with a Nike edition, and I've been loving it ever since. It's much faster than the original watch. It's worked out nicely for me, and I'm really looking forward to moving forward with anything new that comes out.
Nice. Yeah. So your voice was in my head as I was walking around the Apple store a few weeks ago. And this was before all the latest round of news about possible new watch models. And I'm sure this will all be even older news by the time the show comes out. But I was considering upgrading because, as I mentioned on the show, my Gen 0, first generation Series 0 Apple Watch, self-destructed when I arrived at the Apple Park Visitor Center. And as my clients would say, I think there's some sort of conspiracy from Apple, planned obsolescence, planned down to the minute and second. The watch self-destructed, back of the watch sort of popped off. And I thought, well, let me see if this can either be repaired or maybe it's worth something in trade. Maybe I can just repair it myself. Procrastinated a couple of states and eventually went into a different Apple store. Let me ask them about the Apple Watches. And I'm reviewing them and I'm hearing your voice in my head about how much of a nice upgrade this is. And the Apple store employee kind of shook his head and said, don't buy an Apple Watch. And I was like, this is an interesting sales tactic, you know. He goes, well, you know, they're going to be coming out with some new ones. And I said, oh, that's interesting. You know, I hadn't heard the latest news. Now, this was before this, you know, recent round of actual news where I think we have some leaked images and going to be a larger size screen and whatever. That's all very tempting. But this was before that. So I don't know what sort of sites this employee was tuned into, but he seemed to know something and pretty easily predictable considering they have been on a pretty regular update cycle. So I'm glad he mentioned that because it staved off my hunger for a new Apple product for a little while. And I'm now in an even better position because my old Apple Watch is totally irreparable. The little tiny ribbon cable that was connecting the little back of it that popped off to the rest of the body started to rip slightly. It's done. You know, I'm not going to try and like source parts for this little tiny little Apple Watch. It was worth something like, I don't know, $30 in trade, you know, fully functional, which it's not. It would cost me probably over $100 something to repair it. So it basically made the decision. Very easy. When the new Apple Watch comes out, I'm a buyer.
So you were using the duct tape method for a while when the back popped off and that finally gave way? Is that what happened?
You know, it's funny. I stopped even wearing it for a while and I, in theory, haven't really missed it, although I do miss the notification sometimes and certainly the fitness tracking features, especially now being mobile and even more active on a daily basis. I'd love to be tracking that. I haven't worn it. Probably happened is at some point when I went to like take the back off to inspect it, I probably just either it fell out or kind of came off with too much force or I pulled on it in the wrong direction and it just ripped. I guess it's a good position to be in there. It makes it really easy, you know, to decide like, well, if I want to watch, this is the perfect one to get because it seems like it's going to be the first sort of major like form factor, you know, upgrade from the original. So I'm pretty excited about it. But what this prompted also was a new segment, I thought. And no, it's not Joe's Apple Watch Corner. It is going to be a segment that I thought would help redeem the Apple Store a little bit. Well, how about something learned at the Apple Store? I learned where to check my gift card balance on my iPhone. So I had previously added some gift cards to my Apple account. I had no idea where to figure out like where that balance would be shown. So I asked an employee of the Apple Store. And he actually knew right off the top of his head where to check it. It's in settings under App Store, and you just tap View Account. I thought it would be under settings somewhere. I was thinking it's in the wallet app or something like that. But no, it's in the App Store. So iTunes and App Store, and you just view your account, and that's where you can check your balances.
You know, I was thinking as you were in the Apple Store, by the way, that it was curious that the employee was definitive about a new model coming out when it should be normally on their stance, mum's the word, you know, those exactly. are just rumors, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, nah, don't buy this.
It was a hardline stance. I mean, it was kind of surprising that he would take such a definitive position on it. Not even like, well, you know, if you check the sites, you may want to, you know, I mean, it definitely was not helping sell any products. I don't imagine that management would look too kindly on that kind of guidance from an employee. And I'm not sure really if it's in his interest to be saying that to basically all the customers who walk through there. If that gets back to Apple, it's probably not a good thing. But, you know, then again, he's helping me save the frustration of buying a product and then having to return it and possibly getting annoyed with, you know, with him for maybe making a recommendation that is not in my interest. So I really appreciated it that he would come out and say that outright, you know, with basically no hedging, just telling me to wait. I thought that was very good advice.
He was clearly off script. I mean, that's for sure. Just wanted to mention, it's no surprise that your gizmos and your gadgets, your electronics from Apple were falling apart as you approach one infinite loop. If you refer back to one of our early shows, you'll notice that Sam Valencia, our distinguished guy who's in the know and kind of knows some of the inside stuff, he's actually posing in front of the sign in one infinite loop with a Kevlar vest. And this is precisely why. They have magnets and they have devices, electronics hidden across the entire campus, which cause your devices to go south, and then you have to go to the store and buy new devices. So this is quite common, Joe, so I'm not surprised.
Shortly after that photo was taken, my MacBook self-destructed, so I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Nice.
We should have warned you.
It makes a lot of sense. Yeah, you guys should have warned me. Exactly. All these years of hearing this conspiracy reported by my clients, I never believed them. And here I am falling prey to it. So could have saved me, guys.
You live and you learn, Joe.
On the back of that new segment, Learned at the Apple Store, how about a segment, another new segment? Whoa, you guys didn't see that coming. I sometimes introduce two segments at once.
I was actually hoping you'd put me on the spot and ask me to share things I've learned at the Apple Store because I would come up empty, my friend. Sam, what have you learned at the Apple Store?
Yeah, you could just insert the crickets recording at this point, right? In the feed.
Or the sad trombone. Yeah. Right. All right, what have I learned from the clients? Please, do tell. Do tell.
So this is, again, you know, something I learned from a client. I'm a big user of 1Password. I use 1Password constantly, and I help a lot of clients with it. And I had a client who I was, you know, set up to help them with something that wasn't working. And they said, you know, 1Password isn't working. I used to be able to hit command backslash. You know, my password information would autofill. Kind of just had to go along with it and say, yeah, no, that's a great feature. You know, I totally agree.
That's standard practice.
You know, like I didn't go, yeah, standard practice. You know, I didn't go as far as to say like I use that all the time because you kind of want to hedge it. But I kind of went along with it, you know, as if like I knew what they were talking about. I proceeded to fix the problem, which was simply that the extension wasn't installed, I think, in Safari, or, you know, they had installed the new version of 1Password 7 and maybe 1Password Mini wasn't running, or the extension wasn't installed or whatever. The side effect of troubleshooting this issue was I then, you know, hit command backslash, and sure enough, it filled in their information and they were satisfied that the problem was solved. I learned something from the client, which was that command backslash is a really easy way to autofill your passwords. And here I was using 1Password all these years without actually using that probably pretty core feature.
Whoa, 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 whoa. So you're on a particular page that's asking for a username and password, and you put in command backslash and it autofills?
Oh, man.
Yeah, exactly. That's a feature of 1Password.
You guys, I am not cutting edge by any stretch of the imagination, but I've been doing this for years, command backslash. And I don't know where I first heard it, but that's always the way I rolled with 1Password.
Hmm.
here's the reason. I can give you a reason why I tend not to use this type of feature. This is just my own paranoia and skepticism, but I don't like to get in the habit of doing something that can have the result of putting data that's sensitive data in the wrong place. And I guess what I'm getting at is I don't trust hitting the shortcut is always going to do the right thing. I sort of prefer to like go into the field where I want it to be pasted and then click to select the correct information. Like I click on the little 1Password, you know, icon in the Safari toolbar, and then you know, I can then choose like which password I want to be auto-filled. You know, again, this is paranoia. This is not like best security practice or something that everybody should follow. But that's, I think, why I never really got in the habit of taking that shortcut, because I wanted to actually manually select the item in question that I want to fill in.
So this may be akin to not only wearing the propeller hat, but having the chin strap to keep it on your head.
Yes. Yes. The belt and suspenders method of paranoia, yeah. Indeed.
Yeah.
That leads me to a new segment, which is I learned this on Command Control Power, because I didn't know that at all.
Well, I thought it was actually kind of amazing that this client even used the right term. So command backslash, it's not command slash, it's command backslash indeed. And that's exactly what they said. You know, how many clients even know the difference between slash and backslash, you know? To learn that it was command backslash from a client and to actually have them get the shortcut correct, I thought was pretty big win.
Yeah, that's impressive. And the fact that you were able to kind of cover your tracks pretty quickly, you know, think on your feet and go like, oh yes, let me look into this for you because I use command backslash all the time. Let me see here. Oh yes.
Right, exactly.
You don't have the extension installed. Of course. Let's do that. And here we go.
Can't believe that such a fundamental core feature of 1Password that I use all the time myself is not working properly.
Good coverage.
Sir. Yeah. I hate to dominate this first show back, but I might as well continue on the theme of 1Password and just mention.
So you deserve to take the baton and run to the front of the line, even though Sam's our resident track star in the family here, in the power trio.
Right. I will gladly continue with my ranting here and continue a 1Password rant. Sorry. Well, I guess I haven't really been ranting yet, but get ready for it, because I had a whole thread that I posted on 1Password's discussion forum, I guess. It's kind of like user-to-user support. It's a little bit beyond Apple's discussions because it's not just user-to-user. You do have lots of contributions from the 1Password support team. Official support communications happening here as well, which is really a nice way to get support if you need it. Let's rewind back to when 1Password 7 came out. This was probably June or July, you know, earlier this summer. 1Password 7 was released, and it was a pretty big change from the previous versions. It was not exactly the smoothest migration process, I think, especially if you had non-standard methods of syncing like Dropbox, which they kind of revoked at one point and then put back in. And it was a little bit of a bumpy ride going to 1Password 7. But, you know, this is what I do for a living and I can handle all that. And I got 1Password onboarded and I was happy and ready to go. I'm not an early adopter either, unlike some people on this conference call here. And by the way, Jerry, I'm referring to you. I tend not to install the beta version of like a fundamental app that I use every day, you know, let alone something that is intrinsic to our security. And I don't even install a 0.0 release of something like that. You know, I want to know about it pretty early on for my own client's benefit as well. But I don't want to be a beta tester or even a 0.0 tester of something like 1Password. Furthermore, I'm the type of person to read the release notes every single time 1Password has an update. Traditionally, I will read the release notes because it's a really important app. Let's say they make a change to the syncing mechanism or the autofill method or something like that. You know, that might have repercussions in your workflow. That might have security repercussions, like maybe your data starts to get siphoned off to some third party and you want to kind of know about that. Not that I would expect them to do that, but I take it that seriously that I actually read their release notes. I don't do that with very many apps, but something like 1Password, I do tend to read those release notes. So I finally upgraded. It's not without a lot of serious thought and care. And at some point, a few days later, I realized that one of my very core workflows doesn't function anymore, and that is Command F. Now, Command F is a pretty core feature of the Mac OS. Broadly speaking, we're talking about the find command. I mean, how often do you use find in a given day? You probably can't even count. It's got to be like hundreds, right? So it's a pretty core function to be able to find text, let's say. And the way I use 1Password, maybe it's a little bit different from some other people, but I use secure notes pretty heavily. I go in and I document things for clients in secure notes oftentimes. I might have lists of passwords in secure note with headings and then data. So it would say something like accounting iMac, username such and such, password such and such. And I know there are other tools I can use to document this type of information. a lot of those tools have structured templates for this kind of thing. So it's not just free form notes like I'm using. For historical reasons, the way we do this, secure method that I trust because it's syncing through mechanisms that I have vetted. It's encrypted at rest and in transit, whereas I've looked into some other tools and I'm not so sure about their security model. Although after my recent experience, I'm willing to consider alternatives and I'd be interested in hearing about them. But nonetheless, I have secure notes in 1Password that have a lot of proprietary data in it. I therefore oftentimes will bring up a client secure note and hit Command F to search it. 1Password 7 broke the ability to do that. To me, that sounds crazy. If I have text information in a Mac app, I should be able to hit Command F and search that text. I don't think I'm sounding too crazy here at this point. I should hedge that by saying there is a workaround, which is if I'm looking at a secure note and I click edit and I go into edit mode, and then I click inside the note in this freeform text in this massive text field that's now editable, and then I hit Command F, I can then search my notes like I could before. Previously, I didn't have to do those steps. I would just click on a client note and Command F, and I'd find the information I'm looking for. That, to me, is a pretty fundamental problem. That's a regression. When an app comes out with an update and a feature is broken that I'd previously been using, I don't think that's right, and I can't really accept that. I was frustrated enough to post about this in the 1Password discussion forum. To their credit, someone from 1Password responded. However, they said, this is working as designed.
I would think that because you can't invoke Command F, it's a layer of transparency or security that they've built in that maybe wasn't evident before in the app, that you just can't simply go searching around, poking around, and all of a sudden you're into your secure notes and you're banging into, you know, all this client data, so that if somebody wandered up to your computer and started doing this. So I would think it is designed as function, that they actually made it better. I didn't read your post, but that would be my thought.
It's a fair comment. There are mechanisms like that where passwords are hidden by default. I would imagine you can't like search for contents of a password field that would be hidden by default, for example, in 1Password. What we're talking about are secure notes, which by default, as long as your vault is unlocked, they are displayed in plain text. So if I open up 1Password and I unlock it, I can then click on a client secure note and it's simply displayed there as plain text on screen. So we're already past the point where it's unlocked. I mean, at that point I should be able to hit Command F and just find, you know, whatever the contents of the note are. It's not actually a security feature. It's basically a side effect, as one of their representatives says, and I quote, not bug per se, as this is functioning as intended, but a side effect of their having added markdown support. So they actually added markdown support to these previously plain text only notes as of 1Password 7. So now you can optionally use markdown in your 1Password secure notes and it will format it using markdown on the fly. They say because they added markdown support, you can no longer use Command F. What does that mean? It doesn't really follow. What they're saying, if you read through my post, and I'll link to it in the show notes, is that they used to get search for free. Search is a function of the OS. If you use like a supported text field type in your coding environment, you use a standard text field can just be searched, you know, using Command F. But because they changed the type and they no longer just display plain text, they display their own custom formatted markdown text. I think that's why Command F no longer works in a note field unless you're in editing mode. To me, it's just not a good workaround to say you have to go into edit mode. Number one, when I click edit, now suddenly the entirety of my note is subject to change. You know, I could accidentally change something in my critically important secure note field. So I don't want to just go into edit mode frivolously. Secondly, whenever you exit edit mode, if you just hit cancel, it asks you if you want to close without saving changes, even if you haven't made any changes. Which that seems like a bug, but maybe it's a side effect of this information being encrypted by default or whatever. You never want to train the user to just get in the habit of clicking don't save, especially in 1Password. That's not really a good workaround to me to say, well, just click edit, don't change anything, click cancel, And then don't save. Like, so basically like 90 times a day, I'm hitting don't save in one password. That can't lead to good results.
Point well taken. I sense your frustration. So just to be absolutely clear, they've taken away this feature for you because they built in Markdown support.
That's exactly right. And yeah, they say that, well, so many people asked for Markdown support and no one cares about Command F. That's basically what they said.
Yeah, that ain't right.
Well, I'm just enjoying throughout this whole conversation. I decided to look at the forums to find Joe's post, and he got pretty pissed, I think. I was enjoying reading through that material, but I see your point. At the time, there wasn't Markdown support. And then when they implemented this, it took away a trusty part of the app that was your main focus of it. So I'd be kind of pissed too.
And their response is basically like, not enough people have complained about this for us to really care. One guy did go as so far as to say, I'm surprised more people haven't complained about this. I mentioned it and basically no one else is, you know, is complaining, although a couple other people have indeed mentioned it. So the other issue with this Markdown support that nobody asked for is that all my notes that I'd previously entered in 1Password, there's probably, you know, hundreds of them or something like that, at least many dozens, now suddenly are being run through this Markdown syntax interpreter and reformatted with Markdown support. So not only have I lost Command F, but now if I look at some of my client notes, they don't have the correct information. For example, if you use a hashtag at the beginning of a line that represents a heading, if I have a user that has a password that starts with like a pound sign, it doesn't show as their password. It shows as a bolded heading with the wrong data.
Yeah. That's totally ridiculous. They've taken away a feature from you that was really important to your workflow. You're not an edge case with this workflow. I could see myself rolling this way. If I had a tinfoil hat, I don't. But if I did, I could totally see myself putting all my secure client notes. I mean, you're doing the responsible thing. And the fact that they've yanked this carpet out from underneath your feet with no explanation for the most part.
Right. Yeah, and their explanation is you've inadvertently used Markdown support in your secure notes in 1Password. I didn't inadvertently use Markdown support. I typed all this stuff when you didn't have Markdown support. You added Markdown support after the fact. I didn't ask for it. And suddenly, like, you're displaying the wrong information now that used to display the correct information. Yep. They basically changed the deal, you know, like halfway through. It just doesn't.
Yeah, that ain't right, Jack. I know your name is Joe, but I was just saying that.
The thing is, like, that's fine if they want to add Markdown support. I think it's a great feature or syntax that John Gruber invented. There's a correct way to add it. You know, you don't just like add it and then retroactively apply it to all your data, especially in secure notes. Are you serious? Right. Give me an option. Like, give me an optional checkbox that's off by default on each note. Okay, new Markdown feature, turn on or off. Maybe like you apply it to all new notes by default with a warning or a notice to the user. But you don't just run all my previous notes through this new system that I never asked for. It's just, I have this thread that goes on for months. Sam, I know you said it was like, I got pretty heated and I was, but like, I think I was pretty even in reporting this and like diligently like responding to them and stuff. They could have avoided all of this frustration by making the feature optional and off by default. It's pretty simple.
I think perhaps heated was, I was chuckling at that, but you just weren't letting them off the hook, basically, which I agree with. Right. They were giving you answers that weren't satisfactory and you weren't letting them off that easily. I would take the same approach if there was something that was built-in support for something I used on a regular basis and they simply took this away, I'd be just as upset and I wouldn't let them go with this is expected behavior. I think you can use this show as a forum, post it in our show notes and get a whole bunch of the listeners to post in that forum and say, hey, we need Command F too. And we'll see how much they're saying there's not enough feedback for them to care. Well, let's get them to care.
I could have sworn I'm like for the first two or three versions, I'm like, oh, they'll fix that. You know, like they'll definitely fix that. Command F doesn't work. I don't even need to like mention it because they'll definitely fix that in like one or two versions. And when finally they hadn't fixed it, I had to say something about it. First, I searched the forum and I couldn't find anybody reporting it. You kind of bang your head against a problem enough to eventually just tolerate it. But I think, yeah, you're right. If enough people say, you know, I did use that and that is frustrating that it's missing, it can't be that hard for them to fix this, you know, like, so just go back in and fix the search function and we'd all be happy and I'll keep paying for 1Password. Otherwise, I'm going to jump ship because I don't like the trend that this seems to reflect.
The other thing too, and this sort of opens up another conversation, is I'm not poking fun here at all, But you're one of those guys who has a safe in his house. To make the analogy, my computer is my sanctuary in terms of where I store my critical data and my sensitive data. So I don't share things that have to do with my identity, my credit card, any sort of financial information on Dropbox. And I also make sure that I keep it out of iCloud Drive. Simply by you using secure notes, and you probably are doing the right thing, you're going one step further than most people, or in this case, me, by having that vault within your house, which is basically your one password vault to keep these stored notes. My level of risk and tolerance is probably lower than yours. I mean, I'm outraged by what you're telling me, but at the same time, it wouldn't normally be part of my workflow, only because if they got into my Mac because they got my secure password, which I think is pretty secure, then at that point, all bets are off. Applaud you for going that one extra mile to secure your client data.
What prompted me to use a system like this is the need to actually sync it among multiple devices and, more importantly, to share it among multiple people. So 1Password, you know, has this concept of vaults, and you can share them among family members or team members, and it's all really easy to use and fully supported, and it's a great way to have encrypted and secure data shared between multiple people. It's just funny, though, that they never even expected someone to keep passwords in the secure notes. You know, when I was referring to like, oh, you know, I have these passwords in secure notes and they're now showing the wrong data because of this markdown formatting, interpreting, blah, blah, blah. They were like, passwords and secure notes? You mean a password field? I'm like, no, I type the password in a secure note. Maybe it's part of a narrative. You know, maybe it says the computer upstairs has these two user accounts. I like list the user accounts and list the passwords. It's just the way I work, but they seem to not really expect people to use it that way. So everybody's different. I just kind of felt like at least Command F seems to be like a pretty universal thing that people want to do.
We've all had interactions with different companies here and there that have inadvertently or on purpose taken away functionality that we deem to be critical part of our everyday workflow. I would be just as upset and heated and not let the developer get away with it that easily. It remains to be seen how much leeway you'll get with this and how much they'll address it. I'd be curious to see if any point updates do take care of this. And I'll be happy to throw my hat into the forum if you want.
Sam, how do you share your client data across your team?
We have Basecamp. We have 1Password for Teams, which is a capability. I use 1Password singularly on my computer. We have Basecamp, which is a secure portal online that we use to store stuff centrally so that other members of the team can access it. And within that, you basically have different projects, and you can provide certain team members access with access to certain projects. If I have someone that's just ramping up and they shouldn't be accessing some secure data on some of our, you know, more delicate clients, we won't allow them access to that particular project.
And do you know if that actual storage of that data is encrypted? Would you be as vigilant as Joe and to try to look at that and see how accessible it would be?
I'll wear the tinfoil hat around here, Gary.
It is a secure storage point for us, and a lot of large organizations do use Basecamp for similar reasons. I suppose I'm in the middle of the tinfoil hat club. Like, sometimes I'll put it on like Joe and sometimes I'll toss it like Jerry. So who knows? I mean, feel pretty safe in the security of our data there. To be honest, I have wanted to explore 1Password for Teams. I just never really went down that road.
I'll tell you guys the sort of counterpoint to my tinfoil hat with chin strap method of security. Traveling around the country as I'm doing, going in and out of like various coffee shops and like lobbies and like cafes and whatever. Maybe I'm sitting on the street outside of a cafe. Maybe I'm in a coffee shop working for the day, whatever. The number of times that I'm typing my login password as well as my 1Password master password reminds me how futile this whole effort towards security actually is. Because if somebody really wanted to, I'm probably recorded on video typing my password 3 to 5 times on average every day or something like that. If you really think about it, right? I mean, we live in like this surveillance state. Every business has cameras, whether they're obvious or not. There are cameras on the street. If you're in a major city, you know, just like videotaping every intersection, and ATMs have cameras. I mean, there's just cameras watching you all day. I mean, now I'm sounding really paranoid, but it's just obviously true. Certainly many of them could never reproduce a password to the resolution that you would need watching my fingers typing on my keyboard from far away. but probably a few of them can today. And as the years go on, or even the months go on, more and more of them will get better and better and have higher and higher resolution. I don't think the person who runs the local coffee shop is really looking at all the footage to figure out if anybody typed their password with inside of the camera. Like, I just don't think that's actually happening. But I think that there's not an insignificant chance that some hacker in some foreign country has already hacked into the camera at your local coffee shop, and probably the Wi-Fi as well, therefore. And they are maybe keeping an eye out for possible meaty, juicy targets, and then also, you know, watching them type their password. So they know your machine name, for, you know, they know your MAC address, they know your machine name, they have a guess as to what your username might be, and then they can probably see you typing your password in the overhead cameras. So, okay, I don't know, it's something to think about.
Listen here, Mr. Tinfoil Hat, now you're going too far.
I'm going to mark this show, and you're going to see when this comes out in the news about somebody, mark my words.
If you kept your 2016 MacBook Pro, you'd have Touch ID and no one would see you typing in your password.
Except it wouldn't boot, and then I would have it. That's how secure that system is. It won't even boot.
You know what led to this, Sam? Too many episodes of Mr. Robot and alcohol.
Joe, I do hope you're using a VPN at times on those public networks. I'm paranoid, actually, about that stuff. All joking aside, if my Face ID doesn't work sometimes on my iPhone, I cover it with my hand as I type it in, no matter where I am, because I'm so paranoid of someone seeing that or a camera seeing that. So I am on that page, on your wavelength when we talk about things like that, people seeing you type in that information.
Totally. It's like the ATM. They recommend that you cover it. Feel like a jerk if there's like somebody standing behind you, let alone if you might be perceived as, you know, someone to be biased against whatever person is standing behind you. Anyone standing behind me, and even if no one is there, even probably more importantly, you cover the PIN pad with your hand, right, as you're typing your PIN at the ATM, because right, there could be a camera in there and there could be something reading the mag stripe on your ATM card. And do you know how easy it is to withdraw money from an account? Have you ever had to walk into a bank and hand them your card? You need very little information to get money out. You need your PIN, and you need, like, maybe they're going to ask you for like your credit card with the same bank if it's a high enough amount or something.
Joe,
like that.
Joe, four letters, FDIC. That's all I'm going to say.
True. Okay, fair, fair.
Mic drop, FDIC. Hey,
mic drop.
Yeah.
I got something along those lines. I mean, obviously you can use Face ID on your phone with sunglasses on. It'll recognize other points of your face, right? So have you guys used Face ID with sunglasses on? I assume yes.
Yes.
Okay. So if we're doing
what
that,
about me?
What's...
He didn't ask me. I've got an iPhone 7. So the answer is no, I haven't done that yet.
All right. A random thought crossed my mind the other day. I'm thinking, I unlocked my phone. I was walking down the street with sunglasses on. What's to stop someone, if someone's sleeping and you want to steal information off their phone and you're in that apartment or house when they're sleeping, you can't do it. Their eyes are closed. It's not going to take it. But what if you throw sunglasses on them while they're sleeping and hold the phone up to them? Will it unlock?
I think it can actually see your eyes through the sunglasses. I think it can, it, at least to know if they're open or closed.
Mm.
Built into the iPhone is a REM sensor. It can tell exactly what's going on with your pupils at all times. Same way with those magnets at one infinite loop. The same people that came up with that technology for Apple came up with that.
This definitely sounds like a tinfoil hat show overall.
The overarching theme, though, is really great. And we've actually never touched on this, is what is your risk tolerance, not only for your own data, but for your client data? For me, not, it's on my computer, but it's not shared through any cloud service, even Apple's cloud service. And if they get past my password, well, all bets are off. But it sounds like Sam stores it in Basecamp in an encrypted vault. And Joe, up to this point, and he's, I guess he still is using 1Password. So both of you guys have the safe inside the house that you're using.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I don't want to be an easy target. Not only that, but I mean, I just feel like it's the kind of thing you do, just it's due diligence. At least I tried. You know, if I'm compromised at this point, I mean, I did everything right by myself and by my client. There's an element of that also. What it all comes down to is we have this security model, which is protected by privileged information. If you watch Sam type his passcode into his iPhone, you've got the keys to the kingdom. If you see me type my 1Password master password, you can probably compromise my entire client database of secure info, even from afar. If you can somehow get into my vault, all you need is the master password, basically, to get into it.
Right. And the other thing, too, is what is your profile? Are you, for instance, cavorting all over the country in a mobile home and hanging out with dubious people that you meet at these campsites?
Or, hey, wait a second. I hung out with him recently. Am I a dubious person?
Case in point. You know, yeah.
I rest my case. Or are you flying back and forth all the way across the country? Oh, I've got to teach a class here. Oh, I've got to teach a class there. Running around. With me, most of my stuff is I emerge from underneath my coffee table. I go out and do a client call. I come back to the office, crawl underneath the coffee table. And, you know, that's my profile. I'm joking, but that does come into play too, is how mobile are you? Where are you going? Are you doing a lot of work at Starbucks? Are you doing a lot of work at Panera? Is your computer frequently in other places other than what you would deem to be secure places? For instance, your office, your home office, you know, that's secure. Your client site, for the most part, unless you're in some sort of large organization and you're leaving your computer unattended, most of the time that's in your care, custody, and control. But other times when you're doing a lot of work, or you're remoting in, like in Joe's case, to do company work and you're on a public Wi-Fi and he's obviously VPN'd in, your exposure, that's what they talk about in the insurance business, is what is your exposure? You know, how many miles are you driving a day? You know, when they talk about how much should we charge this guy for his car insurance, it's basically how many miles you put on. Is work 7 miles away or is work 70 miles away? And if it's 70 miles away, I'm going to charge you more. The same thing here. You know, what's your exposure? What's your risk?
It's a great question. Ironically, these things tend to be inversely correlated. When you have clients that are the least threatened by this kind of thing, or like the risk factor is lowest, the risk tolerance is lowest. They're also like the most paranoid. The people that are the most paranoid oftentimes are definitely not a target. And the people that probably should be a little bit paranoid are like playing fast and loose with their passwords. The people that are like the wealthiest, that are like the VIP type clients who maybe have something to lose, in my experience anyway, not be all that concerned with security. And then it's the people who like no one would ever really target tend to be the paranoid ones who want to like install all the quote unquote security apps. Another level of irony is that a lot of the security apps are actually backdoors into your system in some cases. Like, look at the adware doctor debacle in the App Store recently.
You are so spot on. So many times we've gone into these residential calls where someone is very, very concerned about security and privacy. And you're right. You go to the higher end client or the higher end profile business customer. Their password's Pookie Face. It's ridiculous. A company, very high profile in the Northeast. The password to the CFO's email was the address, which was right on the door to his office.
Oh, wow. That's so he'll never forget, right?
Right, exactly. Forget about under the keyboard. Yeah. You have a placard right on your office door, so you never forget your email password.
I have examples of really massive public companies whose security is completely lax. They'll reset a user's password to welcome one as a standard practice.
Mm-hmm. All
you
the
know,
time.
In lowercase, they'll leave it that way. So like months later, I've changed the user's password because that's freaking ridiculous. Months later, they'll be like, have you tried welcome one? I'm like, no. And I'm glad that doesn't work. Are you serious? You know, like you just, not only do you reset the password to welcome one, but you just leave it. Like, it's like, that's their password now. Like, how many users who, I don't even want to name the company, but how many users at this company I'm thinking of that have the password welcome one in lowercase?
It's not HCS Technology Group, is it?
No, that's the password for Sam's Basecamp.
You found me out. So, you know, it cracks me up that you're talking about that, because I have gone into clients that are large corporations in the past, and they're working and they're like, can you help me with this problem? Their Mac is bound to Active Directory. And I'm like, okay, we log in, and they're like, oh, it's just welcome one. And I'm like, what? Really? Like, it's still welcome one. I can't believe this is actually the way. I've seen large organizations exactly what you've seen with the same issue.
So, you know, if their password is welcome one, then you know they are definitely 100% beyond any doubt hacked. Because, and right. It's just a silent hack, because like that means that basically somebody in some foreign country has very easily logged into that account and they're just happily staying logged in. You know, they're not stirring up any trouble because they don't want to get booted out. They don't want the password to be changed to welcome two and, you know, just ruin the whole game. So, I mean, those are the biggest targets, and probably the biggest targets of hacking are the people who have the password welcome one at this point. If that still flies, you know that you're being hacked by a pretty sophisticated actor who doesn't want any red flags to be thrown. So for our first show back, I thought I would pick up right where I left off and complain about Microsoft Exchange. I recall talking to you guys about the fact that you can't set a contact as a company. right, in Microsoft Exchange. Like, it works in Google, it works in iCloud, but you can't set a contact card as a company in Microsoft Exchange. And I ranted further about multiple phone numbers associated with a contact. And I think you can't have anything beyond what the labels are that they support, home and main and work and mobile or cell, but custom labels like his mobile or her mobile or Jane's cell phone, like, those don't work. It just silently, you know, excludes that data if you try to import it. You have like a limit of, I think, 3 email addresses for any one contact. I mean, these are like archaic limitations that I only recently bumped into a couple months ago after migrating a couple of offices to Microsoft Exchange hosting. And that was after probably a year and a half or 2 years of migrating dozens of other clients to Microsoft Exchange hosting and just never encountering these issues. I have another Microsoft Exchange limitation that I encountered as recently as today, which is you're unable to add more than one calendar alert. This seems to be a limitation I've found references for online, and certainly it stands to reason on this one client machine.
Joe, you're talking about the fact that if you add multiple calendars, are you talking about legitimate alerts, or are you talking about invitation requests and things like that?
No, just like alerts. Like, if you go in and you say, you know, alert 15 minutes before start, you know, normally you have the option there to add another alert.
Per event.
Yeah, for one specific event. It's not allowing more than one alert.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I was totally misunderstanding you. Yeah, that's a pain in the dude.
This is an industry standard tool. Like, you know, remember the old saying, like, nobody ever got fired for recommending IBM? You know, you just go with the industry standard recommendation because it's just a no-brainer. And the equivalent today is like Microsoft Exchange hosting. You know, I mentioned on a previous show, like, I thought I was late to the party. Like, oh, everybody's using Exchange. You know, that's the big corporate server that everybody loves and everything. And I'm the dork on CalDAV and CardDAV. Nobody's ever heard of that stuff, you know. And then I migrate my clients to the industry standard Microsoft Exchange, you know, hosted by Microsoft, Microsoft Office 365. Yeah, we use multiple alerts. How come you didn't tell us about this? I guess I should have known, but also nobody else has complained about it. So that's weird, but frustrating.
I think you and mail just don't go together well, Joe.
I mean, select all delete. That's my method. That's
go back to smoke signals and you'll be good on your end.
Joe, I've got a website for you, daylightmac.com.
Oh man, here we go.
There it is.
You go to daylightmac.com. You sign up for their cloud service. You can add as many alerts as you want for each event. You could knock yourself out.
Man.
Well done.
You know, I mean, I'm covered because I use Google for better or worse. I guess I'm glad I didn't switch to Microsoft Exchange because it would have led to all these other problems. I had a lot of issues with Google, as listeners well know. Microsoft just as bad as Google for different reasons. Appreciate the opportunity to rant. It's good to be back. It's good to have this this outlet.
Well, for our listeners, we never left. I mean, to be fair.
That's true.
Not all of us are cavorting all around the country in a mobile home. Let me just tell you.
Right, right.
Cavorting and showing your password off to all the people in Starbucks.
I had a home user who I see periodically, randomly. We're kind of friendly with each other too, so it's an informal relationship. But he had an issue where whenever he would adjust his signatures in Apple Mail, meaning he would change the font, change the color, the signatures reflected in the actual mail message weren't showing correctly. They were just showing, I thought for a moment that it was like a plain text versus rich text issue, but it wasn't that. So he had spent over 2 hours on the phone with AppleCare support and they could not resolve it for him. And, you know, he was pretty frustrated with that. And he's like, oh, I didn't want to call you and bother you. And I'm thinking, well, you didn't want to pay me is really why you went to AppleCare.
Yeah, translation.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I did the idiotic thing here, which I know I'm going to get beat up on Slack about, but I was right in his condo complex working with another client. So I said, I'll just stop by. I told him literally, I said, listen, I got 15 minutes. I have a really important phone meeting I have to get to. I go in there and I fix his problem in 10 minutes. I got rid of the com.apple.mail folder in Tilda library containers. Kickstarted mail again, and boom, his issue was resolved, and it was a no-brainer. And he was like blown away. He's like, why couldn't they figure this out? I'm like, I don't know, dude. Call them up and find out. But so I decided to not bill him. I was in the complex. I was there 10 minutes. No problem. He's like, oh, thank you so much. And he proceeds, and I told him already, I have to get to a meeting. He proceeds to start telling me some stories. And I'm like, you gotta be freaking kidding me, dude. I'm trying to get out the door, and then his wife jumps in on the story, and I do like them, but not enough to sit there for free for a while. I'm starting to get kind of pissed, and I'm trying to inch my way towards the door. And he's still talking and telling this story, and I'm like, dude, did you not hear me that I had to be at a meeting? And I actually didn't, but it was my excuse to get out of there. I did attempt to shake his hand again, and I literally grabbed for the door, and I went out as he was talking. And he walked me to my car, still telling me the story. I opened the door, started my engine, and he's still going on. And I'm like, this is why I should always bill for my time. Mm-hmm. I'll get beat up for it on Slack. It's true. I mean, I should have billed him for those 15 minutes because he cost me 45.
Wow.
How frustrating is that, though? I gave you a freebie. I told you I have to go, and you don't shut up the entire time.
Right.
That was my annoying story.
You already learned the lesson. Always bill for your time. I guess that came up recently on Slack. The beating will be fresh in everyone's mind. So that's
exactly
that's good. Highly relevant Slack beating for that issue.